Hi, this is the voice, Michael Schiavello. You're listening to the Premium Oddscast, hosted by leading MMA odds maker Nick Kalikas, fight scientist and author of Fightnomics, Reid Kuhn, and MMA journalist Brian Heminger. The absolute best UFC betting info, picks, statistics, and analysis from the most respected authority in mixed martial arts betting, MMAOddsBreaker.com.
Welcome to the Premium Oddscast, presented by Five Dime Sportsbook. I'm Brian Heminger, joined today by leading mixed martial arts oddsmaker Nick Kalikas to break down this Saturday's UFC 219 event, which takes place in Las Vegas, Nevada. If you're unfamiliar with our format, Nick and I will break down the fight card from top to bottom, providing extensive analysis and a pick for each fight after doing our film study for the event. Looking back at our last event, we broke even for UFC on Fox 26, after going 1-1 on our premium bets, but we did win our one-unit free bet on Glover Teixeira. Back to the present, UFC 219 features a 10-fight card in total and will be aired on UFC Fight Pass, Fox Sports 1, and pay-per-view this Saturday night. Let's dive right in. Now, kicking things off on Fight Pass is a bantamweight contest between Tim Elliott, who is 15-8-1, and Mark De La Rosa, who is 9-0. Now, Nick, where did you open this fight, and how has the public shifted things so far?
First off, for all you loyal listeners out there of the Oddcast, I want to wish you guys all happy holidays. I know a lot of you guys are spending time with your families and taking a little break. So thanks for taking time off, as always, and listening to us tonight. And, you know, through the years, like I said, I know we have a lot of loyal listeners, so we appreciate you all, and happy holidays. So getting back to this, I opened Elliott -230, the comeback in De La Rosa, at +170, and that was at our sponsored sportsbook, fivedimes.eu, currently over at Five Dimes. It is Elliott -225, the comeback on De La Rosa is at +185. So line margins have tightened up, and there's two-way action coming in on this fight. Nothing significant. I mean, no crazy movement on this one at all. It's just one of those fights that I think it's kind of tricky. I mean, I know a lot of us have a ton of respect for Tim Elliott. I mean, he won the Ultimate Fighter, of course, that tournament they had to get the title shot. He performed really well in that title shot against the man, Demetrius Johnson himself. And not just that. I mean, even in his first stint in the UFC, Elliott was a really solid fighter. I believe that he shouldn't have been cut and let go of the roster. I know he suffered a few losses to top tier competition, but that being said, we all knew that he belonged, on the roster, and he should, like I said, I don't think he should have ever been cut. So Elliott's the type of fighter that has so much talent that he's always going to be in the mix. And I think I don't want to call him a gatekeeper in the flyweight division, but I mean, he's almost around that level. Cause if you beat Elliott, you're definitely doing some great things and you're probably on your way to a title shot eventually. That's, you know, how good Elliott is. So the guy's just a relentless fighter, fights at a high pace, has good wrestling. His stand up is unorthodox, but effective. He's got a good jiu-jitsu game to go along with it. And I mean, like I said, the guy's just an outstanding fighter. I mean, he doesn't gas. He just, you could expect a quality fight from Elliott every time out. So a ton of respect for him. But the line being only -225 on a debuting guy and De La Rosa says a lot. I mean, typically speaking, you would see Elliott's line a little bit higher. But De La Rosa is fighting at bantamweight, and Elliott is actually stepping up to bantamweight for this fight because it was put together in a couple weeks' notice. So De La Rosa is stepping in on short notice. And the guy's talented, man. I mean, he's an undefeated hype prospect. He's also married to current UFC fighter Montana Stewart, or I should say Montana De La Rosa now. So he's just got, I mean, MMA in his blood. He's obviously been a part of her for a long time. That's why a little bit of hype behind him as well. I mean, he's been training with a lot of good people throughout, you know, his career. He's had a lot of big opportunities, including, I know he was in Combat the Americas. He's been on, LFA and Access TV as well, or Legacy Fighting, I should say back then. He's just been around for a while, and a lot of people have been talking about him. I mean, really, he's kind of famous for pulling out of his Access TV fight with Ocho Peterson, Steven Ocho, which is another good solid fighter, obviously, for you guys that watch the Contender Series or Access TV fights. You know how good Ocho is. But there was a big weight-cutting fiasco. I know Brian wants to touch on this probably as well. I'll let him get in further detail with it. But anyway, he's kind of known for that craziness that happened there as well. But overall, I mean, he's got the hype because of his complete game. The guy is fast. He's explosive. I mean, on the feet, his boxing is really nice. It's clean. It's accurate. He has these short combos that he throws, but they have power behind him, and it's fun to watch him fight. He's got really good footwork, good scrambling ability on the ground as well. His jiu-jitsu's really solid to go along with it. He's got good takedown defense, and if you do get him down, he's really hard to keep down. He's the type of guy that maybe you get him down for a split second, but he finds a way to scramble back up to his feet, and he's where he wants to be. So Elliott has his hands full in De La Rosa. Again, I mean, he's fighting up at bantamweight. Elliott's probably going to have a little size on him, believe it or not. He's going to be a couple inches taller, I believe, maybe a couple inches reach. But as far as pure power goes, it's going to be interesting to see, you know, who has that edge. I know Elliott's going to be a little bit older, of course. De La Rosa coming in at age 23, where Elliott's 30. So Elliott might have a little bit more old man strength here in this spot as well. But overall, I'm expecting a scrap. And I think in the first round, it's going to be really close. I wouldn't even be surprised if De La Rosa takes the first round. But as it goes is where my problem is here, because De La Rosa, so if you look at his footage and you look at his film, as fights progress, I mean, obviously he's a great fighter, undefeated, as we said, but he does tend to slow down a little bit as fights go. And now this is on short notice, fighting a guy that is a spark plug that has a, like I said, endless gas tank, it seems, in Elliott. That's going to be tough in round two and round three for him. So I'm going to pick Elliott because of that alone, but I wouldn't be surprised if De La Rosa is able to possibly finish Elliott. I mean, Elliott's tough to finish, but we've seen, you know, him susceptible to maybe submissions as of late as well. And I think De La Rosa's jiu-jitsu game's legit enough that if he gets Elliott in a tough spot, he might be able to finish it. Now, I don't think that happens. I think it probably hits the scorecards and Elliott wins a decision, but you never know. I think that's De La Rosa's best shot to win. It's probably inside the distance as it goes. But if not, I think we're going to see a competitive 29-28 type of decision from Elliott. So that's why I'm going to pick him to go.
Tim Elliott is obviously a flyweight, and he's taking this fight at bantamweight because of the short notice replacement. Elliott was supposed to fight at a previous UFC event. He got pulled because his opponent missed weight horribly and he didn't want to fight him. And then they tried to book him for another fight and he turned it down. And then they finally booked him for this one and he accepted. Now, what's interesting here is that Mark De La Rosa is a bantamweight. Most of his fights have been at bantamweight, and this is his UFC debut. But the one thing that's interesting most of all is the fact that Elliott's the bigger guy. De La Rosa has come in under the bantamweight limit repeatedly in, for the weigh-ins of several of his fights. So he's a guy that I definitely think could make the drop to flyweight, and I think that he will make the drop to flyweight if he wants to be competitive in the UFC. So basically this is two flyweights fighting at bantamweight. And then Tim Elliott's had a huge long camp and De La Rosa has not. So that's why I'm leaning more towards Elliott. De La Rosa is a talented fighter. He has competent stand-up, relatively technical boxing, and a very advanced Brazilian jiu-jitsu game. He has a lot of submissions on his record. So, you know, this is a guy that I think can get the job done against most people. And if he catches Elliott, he could finish him. I mean, Elliott, as we remember, did get caught by Ben Wen and tapped out pretty quickly. Now, obviously, Elliott also has gone five rounds with the champion Demetrius Johnson. So depending on if Elliott's taken this super serious, and you would hope that he is because of a lot of the things that he's been saying lately. He's been running his mouth a little bit, and he can't afford to go out and have a really bad performance. So Elliott is a guy that has a strong gas tank, pushes a high pace, both on the feet, on the ground. He looks for takedowns. He looks for ground and pound. He's aggressive in the clinch. He throws very unorthodox attacks. He has a very unorthodox fighting style in general, throwing spinning stuff and moving at weird angles. I mean, he's just a tough guy to get a beat on. And if he can just keep De La Rosa guessing, I think he'll be in a good position. One thing to definitely keep in mind is the fact that De La Rosa is, doesn't have the best gas tank. He does slow down in fights, and then he's also taking this on short notice. So I can see De La Rosa starting strong, but I don't see him finishing strong. So unless De La Rosa takes Elliott out quickly, I think Elliott at least wins the second and third rounds and wins a decision. But I do expect De La Rosa to be competitive with him as long as his gas tank holds up. But I just don't think it holds up. And even though the lighter weight guy's conditioning isn't as much of an issue, Elliott should push a high enough pace that it will factor in. So my pick is going to be Tim Elliott. Now, moving up to the middleweight division, we have Marvin Vettori, who is 12-3, taking on Omari Akhmedov, who is 17-4. Now, Nick, what's the MMA oddsmaker's perspective on this one?
I open Vettori -265 to come back on Akhmedov, +185. Right now, looking over five dimes, it's Vettori -230 to come back on Akhmedov is +190. So line margins have tightened up again, and there's another spot where there's two-way action coming in, nothing significant, no crazy movement either here. It's a tough one. I mean, I think Vettori definitely has an edge in his fight overall. I like his ability to strike on the feet a lot better than Akhmedov. Akhmedov offensively is not bad, but defensively is where you are definitely concerned with him on the feet at least, because his chin is so bad that, I mean, Vittori's power could definitely get through and probably knock Akhmedov out. So that's what you have to be concerned with betting Akhmedov, definitely, is that chin and the defense that he's got on his feet. Vettori is not going to give him too many second chances. He's got that killer instinct. Like I said, he's got some powerful striking. And this is at middleweight too, by the way. So Akhmedov is moving up to Vittori's more natural weight class. Now, Akhmedov has had some experience in middleweight. I understand it. But still, I think the size and strength advantage definitely goes to Akhmedov. Or, I mean, I should say Vettori, sorry. And the youth factor also goes to Vettori. So a lot of good things going for Vettori here if he can keep it upright. But that's the big if. I think Akhmedov has a path to victory here, and it is definitely utilizing his wrestling. He's probably a little bit underrated. In the past, when he has had success in getting the fights to the ground, he's usually won and done well. So that's kind of been Vittori's, I think, his kryptonite at the same time as well. So this really boils down to, can Akhmedov get him down and hold him down enough to win a decision here along the way? I don't think he can. I think he might be able to steal a takedown or two along the way, but I think as the fight progresses, Vittori's going to get his spots on the feet, and he'll do enough damage to probably knock Akhmedov out or possibly sway the cards in his favor if it does hit the scorecards as well. So I just think stylistically, it's an interesting matchup. I just think Vettori, I trust a little bit more here in this spot, even though Akhmedov has looked pretty solid, you know, off and on. I mean, he's not the most consistent fighter, but at the same time, I still think that this matchup won't matter here for him. I think he's just, if he can't get the fight to the ground and basically, you know, out-wrestle Vettori for three rounds, he's going to get beat. So Vettori is my pick and probably inside the distance by knockout.
And I can totally see Vettori winning inside the distance by knockout. I mean, the guy is youthful. He's got power in his hands. He's improving. So clearly, if he can connect solidly on Akhmedov's chin, there's a good chance that he does take Akhmedov out. But you got to remember, Akhmedov is a guy that he's faced several people that have the capability of knocking him out, and he's been able to get them on the floor, put them on their back, and win decisions. You look at his last fight against Abdul Razak Al-Hassan, a guy with insane power that had finished most of his fights in less than a minute, whether alone the first round, and he was able to get 6 takedowns in that fight and win a decision. Then you go back, Kyle Noke fight, a guy with decent power, took him down 3 times, wins a decision. You know, Mats Nilsson, 5 takedowns, wins a decision. So, clearly that's the path to victory for Akhmedov. Now we mentioned that he hasn't been fighting at middleweight. He's moving up for this fight. I believe his last 7 fights have been at welterweight. So he hasn't fought at middleweight since his UFC debut against Thiago Perpetuo, when he was landing and then he got blasted, Perpetuo got blasted, and then eventually Akhmedov ended up knocking him out. I think he won fight of the night for that performance in a 1-round fight. That's how entertaining that was. Clearly, Akhmedov does not want to get into a stand-up battle this time around. I mean, he doesn't have the speed. He doesn't have the power in his hands. I think Vettori would knock him out, would flatten him for sure. So that being said, Vettori is 2-1 in the UFC, but his one loss, Antonio Carlos Jr., took him down 4 times and won a decision. So if Carlos Jr. can take him down, I think Akhmedov can take him down. Akhmedov isn't as talented of a grappler as Antonio Carlos Jr., but I think Akhmedov has just as good wrestling, if not better. So if Akhmedov can close that distance and get a hold of Vettori and drag him to the floor, I think that there's a really good chance that he wins this fight. It's just all about avoiding the big heavy shots on the feet. And I'm not saying that's impossible, because clearly Vettori could knock him out at any moment, but I like Akhmedov's chances of dragging this one to the floor and winning a decision. So my pick is going to be Akhmedov. Now, dropping down to the flyweight division, we have Louis Smolka, who is 11-4, taking on Mateus Nicolau, who is 12-2-1. Now, Nick, where did you open this fight, and how has the public shifted things so far?
I opened Nicolau minus 155, the comeback on Smolka plus 115. There has been some movement on this fight, significant actually. Right now, looking over five times, it's Nicolau minus 270, the comeback on Smolka plus 230. So this is one of the biggest movers on this whole board, really, as far as UFC 219 goes. I am a little bit surprised, because, I mean, generally speaking, a lot of people do respect Smolka. So I did open the line, obviously, a little bit too low. I do like Nicolau in this fight as well. I just think stylistically it's a good fight for him. But I was surprised with the amount of action that came in on Nicolau early on. Again, with the line ending up at minus 270, almost 300 on a guy, you know, like Nicolau over Smolka, a little bit surprising. But that being said, again, I do get it. I think, interestingly enough, I think Smolka probably is the more well-rounded fighter, but again, the way they style up here in this fight, they match up, I think Nicolau probably has the takedown defense to keep this fight upright, and if he does, he's the better striker in this spot. I trust his chin a little bit more as well. I wish his activity level picked up a little bit, but that being said, I think he's going to be okay, and he's going to pick his shots here against Smolka. Again, he has to maintain this fight upright, or at the same time, I know Nicolau likes to go for takedowns at times and get top position. He just has to be careful. He doesn't want to mess around on the ground too much from Smolka. Now, again, Nicolau does have a pretty decent ground game in his own right, decent sub-defense as well, but Smolka's one of those guys that's so smooth and sneaky, and with that length on the ground, he can give a lot of people fits. So in my opinion, Nicolau, to win this fight, he definitely needs to keep it upright and just kind of, like I said, pick Smolka apart, because the openings are there. If you watch Smolka fight, obviously, that's one of the areas that he lacks. I mean, offensively, on the feet, he's not that bad, but defensively, he does get tagged a lot. He's got kind of tall man defense, and Nicolau can exploit that, and he should here as well. So I do agree with some of the early action, but I don't agree where the price is now. I do think at the current price, if you're getting Smolka around plus 230 or so, there's probably a little bit of value there. But again, I am going to pick Nicolau, and I do think he's going to win this fight. But I think it's a dog or pass situation. I would not lay almost 3-1 over Smolka at this point right now, especially with Nicolau. He's one of these guys that's obviously still fairly young at age 24. Not that Smolka's an old man at 26, but Nicolau's going to continue to improve, and he's going to make some mistakes here and there, and he can't afford to make a mistake, especially on the ground against Smolka here. So be careful out there if you're betting this fight. Again, I think it is a dog or pass situation, but my pick is Nicolau, because I do think he keeps it upright and he outstrikes Smolka to a win.
There's a lot of factors in this contest. Nicolau is a guy that burst onto the scene with a decision victory over John Moraga that immediately put him into the top 15 in the flyweight rankings, and then he was preparing for his next fight, and then what'd he do? He tests positive for USADA, and he has to sit out a whole year. So that's what he's been doing on the sidelines right now, but, I mean, this is still a guy that's young, that's talented, but we're gonna find out how much of his performance lately had been artificially improved. Because he made that UFC debut against Bruno Correa, picked up a Japanese necktie submission. That might be the only Japanese necktie in UFC history off the top of my head, back in November of 2015. And then the Moraga decision was July of 2016. So he hasn't fought since July of 2016. That's crazy. So now he's been out for about a year and a half. And the UFC's throwing him right back into the fire. I mean, Luis Smolka's no joke. This is a guy that's big for the division, has a strong ground game, tenacious ground and pound, and is, while he's not the best stand-up fighter, he does show he's capable on the feet. I mean, he finished a fight with a Shawn Michaels sweet chin music once. So he knows what he's doing on the feet. He's just, you know, that's not clearly his strength. So, Nicolau, on the other hand, I think has some competent hands, some good power in his hands. He's definitely capable of hurting opponents on the feet. And he's also, got the pretty decent ground game. Now, I don't think his ground game is as good as Smolka's. So if I'm Nicolau, I'm trying to keep this fight standing, and I want him to, try to land some heavy shots. I mean, I think he has a really nasty step in left hand, that he could do some big time damage against Smoka with. His problem against Moraga was he kind of got lulled into a staring contest at times in the first couple rounds. I mean, that fight was slow paced before Nicolau finally turned it up a little bit in the third round to win the decision. I think he needs to be a little bit more aggressive here. So, there's a lot of factors in this fight because of the layoff, him having to be off of whatever doping violation he was on. And then, another thing is, you know, such a young fighter. He's 24 years old. I mean, he may have just been adding to his game this whole time that he's been off. You know, the younger fighters, they can take big leaps and, it's tough because, you know, we only know them from what we've seen in the footage, and then they're out there doing stuff that we've never seen them capable of doing. So I think that that might be the case here with Nicolau, where he'll make up for the ring rust and maybe the doping violation by just improving in technical skill during his time off. So I think that's what really helps him out here. I think he can keep this fight upright for extended periods of time, and I think he can land some big time damage on the feet. So my pick is going to be Mateus Nicolau. Now moving up to the featherweight division, we have Miles Jury, who is 16-2, taking on Rick Glenn, who is 24-1. Now, Nick, what's the MMA oddsmaker's perspective on this one?
Up in Jury minus 300, the comeback on Glenn at plus 220. Right now, over five dimes, it's Jury minus 235. The comeback on Glenn is plus 195. So more action coming in Glenn's way. Man, I'll tell you what, he's getting a ton of respect from his last performance when he beat a prospect in Gavin Tucker. And man, did Glenn look really good in that fight. So he deserves it. And he followed that up, actually, after a win over a guy in Philippe Nover that I think is a bit underrated as well. So back-to-back solid quality wins after his UFC debut at 155 pounds loss to Evan Dunham. So Glenn is the type of guy that's been around the sport for a long time. I mean, he's only 28 years old, but in fight years, he's way beyond that. I mean, not necessarily in a bad way, meaning experience-wise. I mean, Glenn has faced some really solid competition outside of the UFC, and he's one of these guys that you expect to finally get a shot in the UFC, and because he deserves it, and he belongs here. So I'm glad he finally did get that opportunity. And man, I mean, has he made the most of it? Because I think the guy's getting better and better fight by fight. You can, you know, credit him, his hard work, his work ethic, everything. I guess the guys over at Alpha Male have really done a great job with him as well. I mean, he's just taken his game to another level. But unfortunately for him here against Jury, I think it's all going to come to an end. I mean, I'm expecting him to be very competitive because, I mean, that's just the warrior that he is. I just don't see an area that he's clearly better than Jury. I think across the board, if you look at Miles Jury, he's just a better fighter. I mean, I don't think in the stand-up game, Glenn has an edge. I don't think on the ground, Glenn has an edge. And I mean, just across the board, this Jury gets all the check marks, and I think it's going to come through here. I know that Jury's had some unfortunate luck. I mean, if you look at his recent little run, I mean, he looked great against De La Torre, which he needed to, and he should have got that W over De La Torre. He was a pretty solid favorite, but unfortunately for him before that, I mean, Oliveira choked him out. I was surprised by that. Now, again, I guess you should never be surprised who Oliveira chokes out because he's that talented of a submission artist. But that being said, I was expecting Jury to be a little bit more prepared, and he just got caught up in the Oliveira trap, and, you know, credit Oliveira for that. But I was a little bit disappointed with Jury that in that performance. And again, before that, he lost to Cerrone. And again, that was at 155 pounds, but Cerrone put a clinic, you know, on in that fight, basically showing Jury he wasn't ready to compete at that level. But before all that, Jury, man, he was making some great progress. I mean, if you look at some of the quality wins he had in his UFC career, I mean, the Michael Johnson fight, in my opinion, stands out the most, but he had wins over, you know, guys like Nijem, guys like Sanchez. You know, some of these guys aren't obviously, you know, that he's beaten up on our UFC roster anymore. But that being said, you just saw the potential and the talent that Jury has. And I still think that he has that. I mean, he got those couple of bad, disappointing losses out of the way. And I think from here on out, he's going to make some strides and get back to where he wants to be. And that's a potential title shot at 145 pounds with his frame in this division and his talent. I mean, the guy has really good striking, obviously, on the feet. He's got knockout power. He's got finishing ability on the ground with the submission game. He's got wrestling to back that up as well. So he's a complete package. And I think he's ready to, you know, finally take his rightful place. And again, in the mix, possibly a title shot mix eventually here waiting for Jury. But it all starts with this win over Glenn here, and it's going to be a hard-fought win, but I think he gets it. So unfortunately for Glenn, like I said a lot of good things about him. I'm glad he's a part of this roster. I just don't see him beating Jury in any particular area. If it hits the scorecards, Jury wins. If it's a finish inside, I think Jury beats him inside as well. So it's Jury's fight to win or lose. So hopefully he gets the job done here. And like I said, he kind of lives up to his potential, because I think this guy is a great fighter and he has a ton of potential and he could potentially get a title shot. So the pick is Jury, and I'm expecting some great things for him at 145 pounds.
It's good to see Miles Jury back after he took all of 2016 off. He looked pretty strong in his last fight. But this is really the big test to see if Jury can be a contender in the featherweight division. Cause, you know, this is a guy that was ranked in the top 15 at lightweight. And then he drops down to featherweight and then immediately gets tapped out by Charles Oliveira and then takes off over a year. So, Jury is still, at a decent age in his prime at 29 years old. He's still only lost twice in his entire career, although they happened back to back, which is, obviously, it must have been frustrating for him, but this is a winnable fight. You know, Rick Glenn is a guy that has good size for the featherweight division. He has a great activity rate for the featherweight division, and he has relatively good technical striking. That being said, Miles Jury has more power. He's about the same size. I mean, Jury's fought at welterweight before he ever got to the UFC, and now he's fighting two weight classes lower. And Jury has the better ground game of the two of them. He has an extremely good ground game, which is why it was so frustrating for him, probably, because he got out-grappled in back-to-back fights by Cerrone and Oliveira. So, but against the average UFC fighter, and Rick Glenn is more of the average UFC featherweight, I think Jury's going to be in really good shape. Now, don't underestimate Rick Glenn. This kid has a ton of heart, and you know, watching his last fight against Gavin Tucker, a lot of people were underestimating Glenn. They thought that he'd go out and just get the crap kicked out of him. But Glenn just weathered the early storm from Tucker and then just poured it on in rounds two and three and just beat the ever-living snot out of him. So this is a guy that you can't underestimate, and Jury definitely shouldn't, but I expect Glenn to be in this fight for however long it lasts. I mean, it could go to decision, and Glenn, even if his face is battered and bruised and bleeding, I think that he'll keep pushing forward. But I think that he will be battered, bruised, and bleeding at some point, because Miles Jury, I think, is just the better technical fighter in just about every facet of MMA. So Jury's going to be my pick. I think that he might be able to get a submission, but more often than not, he probably wins a decision. So Miles Jury is going to be my pick. Now, moving on to the light heavyweight division for the final bout of the preliminary card, we have Khalil Rountree, who is 7-2, taking on Mikhail Oleksaychik, who is 12-2. Now, Nick, where did you open this fight, and how has the public shifted things so far?
Up in Rountree, minus 260, Oleksaychik at plus 180. Right now, looking over five dimes, it is currently Rountree minus 290. The comeback on Oleksaychik is at plus 245. So a little bit more action coming in Rountree's way. I wasn't sure, man. I mean, there is a lot of hype around Oleksaychik as well. I mean, the guy's known for his striking power, and he's fighting basically another striker. So it's striker versus striker. But if you study this fight deeply and you look at the film and the footage on Oleksaychik, you can definitely see some flaws in his stand-up game. Now, again, offensively, the guy has some power. He's got some accuracy. He's a southpaw, which you like. I mean, obviously, Rountree likes to fight southpaw as well, so that should be interesting. But that being said, Oleksaychik, I mean, he just has that killer instinct, and he's got that tremendous knockout power. And I mean, most of the time, obviously, he gets his opponents out of there. He's faced decent competition outside of the UFC as well before he comes in here. So what I like about him is his accuracy, again, and his killer instinct. He's tough as nails. He's got no quit in him. I mean, I'm saying that because his defense is so bad, and his I don't want to say his chin's bad, but he does get rocked in fights often. And that's why I'm saying he's got no quit in him, because if you don't put him out, the guy's going to keep coming like a zombie, man. I mean, that's what I've noticed about Oleksaychik as well. So he's got the heart. He's got the spirit of a fighter. He's got a lot of offensive skill, but the problem with him is defensively, it's where it goes bad for him. I mean, like I said, I think when you look at him and he gets strikers that have some success against him on the feet, every time he gets hit, he kind of turns that head and shies away from getting hit, which is good. I know you got to go with the punches sometimes or whatnot, people say, but no, if you look at him closely, you could tell that he's got a flawed defensive game on the feet. And with a fighter like Roundtree, with his explosiveness, with his power, I mean, again, it's striker versus striker, but the better striker here is Roundtree to begin with. And defensively speaking, Roundtree's better as well. So this is kind of a nightmare matchup for Oleg Sejcik, in my opinion. I think that Roundtree comes in here and exploits that striking defense and just probably knocks him out. I mean, I don't think – I said Oleg Sejcik is tough as nails and he has no quit in him, but Roundtree's going to put him out cold more than likely when he does land. So stylistically, it's just a bad matchup. It should be fun though because, again, it's striker versus striker. And realistically speaking, both of these guys have power to win this fight. So it's basically who lands the first clean punch is going to win. But more times than not, that should be Roundtree because he is, again, I think overall the better striker, the better defensive striker, and I think his explosiveness and his just ability overall is going to come through here, and he probably gets a W and a finish over a guy like Oleg Sejcik. So my pick is Roundtree, and it should be in highlight reel fashion.
There's one thing you said that I have to disagree with. It's that Oleg Sejcik has faced some decent competition. He really hasn't beat anybody yet. Yeah, he's on a nice little win streak, but he hasn't fought much outside of Europe, and he hasn't really fought any major names in Europe. This is going to be a big test. I think Khalil Roundtree might be an even more dangerous foe. I mean, if you're going to beat Khalil Roundtree, you need to have a ground game. And Oleg Sejcik does not really use the ground. I mean, he's a guy that likes to stand and bang. He likes to brawl. He likes to wing wild looping shots, and then when they connect, I mean, that's how he wins. Against Khalil Roundtree, I mean, he is just going to feast on that type of wild striking. Roundtree is one of the more technical, explosive, and powerful strikers in the light heavyweight division. While his ground game is definitely, you know, it's still something that's in progress, the stand-up is there, and it's dangerous, clearly, as evidenced by his last two stoppage victories that, personally, I think put him on the fringe of the top 15. So, against Oleg Sejcik, you watch Oleg Sejcik fight, and Nick mentioned it, his striking defense just isn't there. And I want to point out a couple situations where it's clearly not there. When he attacks, he moves in a straight line right towards his opponent, leaves himself exposed to counters, something else big time is usually when fighters step in and land a shot, their first instinct is to get away at an angle so that their opponents can't hit them back. Because that's the whole point of fighting, is to hit them and then don't get hit back. But Oleg Sejcik, he like stands there and usually admires his handiwork after he lands a shot. And then he gets hit by counters repeatedly because of that. So there are going to be tremendous opportunities here for Roundtree to land some heavy shots. And I think Oleg Sejcik, while he's tough, he does get dropped in fights. And I just don't think he's going to be tough enough to withstand what Roundtree's bringing. Watching Oleg Sejcik fight, he does have some power, clearly. He has most of his career wins by knockout or TKO. And if there's any puncher's chance for him in this fight, it's if Roundtree is more defending against the head strikes and Oleg Sejcik drops low for like a liver shot, because I have seen him finish fights with just one clean shot, one clean punch to the liver. And if he can work over the body on Roundtree, maybe he can slow him down, and maybe he lands that picture-perfect strike that bends Roundtree in half and sets up a finish. But for the most part, I just think Roundtree doesn't just win, but probably knocks him out in the first round. So my pick is going to be Khalil Roundtree. Now, this brings us to the pay-per-view main card. We have a lightweight contest between Dan Hooker, who is 15-7, and Mark Diakasey, who is 12-1. Now, Nick, what's the MMA oddsmaker's perspective on this one?
Up and Diakasey -230, the comeback on Hooker at +170. Right now, looking for five dimes. Line dropped a little bit. Right now, it's Diakasey -185. The comeback on Hooker is at +160. So, again, didn't drop too bad. Two-way action is coming on this fight, but more support coming in Hooker's way. I'm not really that surprised. I mean, Hooker is definitely a fan favorite out there with this fighting style. I mean, the guy's a warrior. You're talking about a guy that's tough as nails that brings it, that's only getting better fight by fight. Picked up a huge win making his lightweight debut in the UFC against Ross Pearson in his last fight. I mean, typically, obviously, Hooker was fighting at 145 pounds, having some success there. But now, obviously, with his size, 155 pounds seems like it might be the right move here. I mean, especially picking up a great scalp like he did against Pearson there. And Hooker's the type of guy that only gets more confident and gets better as his UFC career progresses a little bit. So it's scary to think he's only going to improve. And with that size and that ability, I mean, the guy is a good striker. He can beat you on the ground as well with the submission game. Like I said, he's tough as nails. He's hard to put away and he's going to bring it. I mean, that's what you can expect in Hooker. So Dicasey has his hands full here against a guy like Hooker. I mean, it's not going to be an easy fight, but honestly, in his loss, in his last fight, I think really, in my opinion, Dicasey's stock went up a little bit because I needed him to get pushed. I wanted to see that in Dicasey. And Close was a guy that really pushed the pace and made that a fight. Now, of course, Dicasey didn't come away with a win in that fight, but still it was close enough. It was a split decision type of fight that, you know, people saw different ways. I mean, he could have won that fight. So to me, it impressed me the most because I was kind of doubting him. I thought that, you know, he was flawed, his cardio, his conditioning, his takedown defense, a lot of flaws with what you see in Dicasey's game. But we have seen some good things with his athleticism, with his ability and his unorthodox striking that's very effective at times as well. So all that put together now to me has sold me that Dicasey is legit. I mean, again, against a guy like Close, even though he lost that fight, proved a lot to me because Close is a very good fighter, just a tough out. We're going to see that. I know Close suffered a loss in his last fight against Tamer, but that being said, he's going to make some waves and obviously he's going to be moving up that lightweight ladder eventually as well. So that wasn't necessarily a bad loss for Dicasey. So that's what I'm referring to here. I think that Dicasey actually is another guy at age 24 that continues to improve fight by fight. And he's getting that real time UFC experience that he really needed, I think, in my opinion. So I think he's going to be even better this fight. And I think he's a nightmare matchup for Hooker, really. I think Dicasey is explosive enough that he's going to be able to control where the fight takes place. I don't think Hooker's going to have success getting him down to the ground. And on the feet, I think Dicasey is the better and more diverse striker. And I think he's going to be the more effective striker as well. So I think Dicasey here picks up a really solid win over a respected fighter like Hooker. And I think the early action coming in Hooker's way, I understand it. You got to respect the guy, but I think it's wrong. I think Dicasey actually picks up the win here. I mean, Hooker's tough to finish, so I would think that it's on the scorecards, but man, with Dicasey's explosiveness and again, his ability is only improving fight by fight. I think we could see Dicasey end up landing on the feet and possibly knocking Hooker out. So we'll see how that ends up, but I think it's Dicasey's fight to win or lose, and he gets an impressive win here. So my pick is Dicasey to win.
Dan Hooker is coming off of a tremendous performance in his last fight where he had that knockout of the year candidate over Ross Pearson. So I'm going to give him all the credit in the world. But that being said, against somebody like Mark Dicasey, I think they're going in opposite directions. Pearson was, you know, near in the end of his career, in my opinion, or at least on a decline. And Dicasey is definitely still on the upswing. And Hooker, while he does have some good size for the division, he has some good power, and he's got a decent enough ground game. I don't think he has the skill set needed to take out somebody like Dicasey. I mean, to beat Dicasey, you need to have tenacious cardio, excellent grappling, and top control. And you need to be able to take him out of his game. Dicasey has that explosive power that he can just finish a fight at any moment. So while Hooker has, you know, not really been dominated in a fight and hasn't lost like handedly, I mean, all three of his UFC losses are by decision. I think Dicasey has the power that he might be able to finish Hooker, especially with, Hooker moving back up a weight class. I mean, this is a guy that did fight at featherweight for a bit. At lightweight, you know, Dicasey should have some size and strength to potentially just bully Hooker a little bit. Hooker, like I said, can mix things up, but I just think Dicasey is going to be quicker. Dicasey is going to be the better athlete. I don't see Hooker being able to get takedowns and take Di Casey out of his game. And I think in terms of how talented these two fighters are, I just think Di Casey has a much higher ceiling and he's starting to fill that up. Yeah, he lost to close in his last fight, but like Nick said, we learned a lot about Di Casey there, and that was a close decision that could have potentially gone either way. And Di Casey learned a lot from that, and I expect that he's going to be very hungry to get another win. So, with Hooker probably being unable to take this fight to the floor, I expect this to be a stand-up fight, and I just don't think Hooker can hang with the athleticism and power of Di Casey. And I think Di Casey doesn't just win, he might be the first guy to stop Dan Hooker in the UFC. So my pick is going to be Mark Di Casey. Now moving up to the welterweight division, we have Carlos Condit, who is 30-10, taking on Neil Magny, who is 19-7. Now Nick, where did you open this fight, and how has the public shifted things so far?
Up in Condit -150, the comeback on Magny at +110. And right now looking over five times, it's Condit -165, the comeback on Magny +145. Not an easy line to set, especially with Condit being out for so long as well. And the amount of respect he really gets. And then for me, always with Magny fights, man, it's tough to cap sometimes with him in the way the public's going to come in. It's just Magny's such a talented fighter, but at the same time, I don't know. I guess there's spots, you know, throughout his career that I guess I have my doubts in him, and then he ends up overperforming and he proves me wrong quite a bit. So Magny's a tough nut for me to crack at times, but I do respect his ability, and obviously I respect Condit as well. So this should be a good fight. To me, it comes down to if Magny can get this fight to the ground, he's probably going to win this fight. I mean, Condit, we've seen in the past, I mean, his kryptonite has always been people getting him down and not wrestling him and kind of grinding out a decision wins over him. I mean, more so than anything else. I know he got submitted in his last fight by Damian Maia, but you know what? I mean, who doesn't Maia submit? Actually, he submitted Magny as well. So take that out of the equation, because neither one of these guys has the submission game Maia does. Although it would get interesting to me if Magny did get on Condit's back. I mean, both these guys do have some submissions. Condit's, you know, obviously capable of subbing people. I mean, even from his back at times, he can. Magny more so from the top, but still, that being said, these guys have a decent submission game. I mean, you got to give the pure jiu-jitsu edge, I guess, to Condit, but I don't think Condit ends up subbing Magny in this fight, honestly. And I think the striking edge definitely belongs to Condit as well. I think he's a more powerful striker. Again, talk about diverse striking ability. I mean, Condit does mix things up relatively well. He's got that killer instinct. And I mean, if this fight stays standing, I expect Condit to do enough damage possibly to knock Magny out. So that's how he wins this fight. But I think Magny's smart enough and he's improved enough that he's going to be able to get some takedowns along the way. And this fight's going to be close if Magny doesn't get knocked out in this fight. I think it's going to end up hitting the scorecards and being a competitive 29-28 type decision. So I'm actually leaning towards a dog here. I'll go against the public grain a little bit here and pick Magny to win. There's just too many unknowns with Condit for me right now. I mean, again, his time off, I know he's, you know, getting in different business ventures. I'm just not sure where he's at right now. I know he's probably going to be hungry to come back to the UFC and win. I mean, a lot of times fighters like Condit that have taken some time off, it does them good. I mean, they need a break from time to time because Condit's been around the sport for a long time. So, and you know, and he's accomplished so much even in the UFC that, I mean, there's not really much to prove for him. Of course, he wants to wear that UFC gold around his waist, but that being said, you know, again, he's one of these guys that's always been on the brink of retirement. So I'm just not sure where his head is, and I'm not sure where his heart is either at this point. So that's why I'm giving Magny actually a shot to pull off this upset, because I think if both fighters are in their prime, there's no doubt I pick Condit to win this fight. I don't know. I guess my confidence level in Condit right now isn't that great. So he could show up here and look fantastic and go out there and just destroy Magny, or I think it could be a grinding, grueling fight that Magny pulls off the win. So I'm going to go with a guy I trust more a little bit at this spot right now, which is Magny. I think Magny, again, does enough. He's a smart fighter. He's always improving as well. I like the fact that he's always willing to learn and you know, and always trying to adapt and become a better fighter. And, you know, he just puts the work in. And if you listen to some of his interviews as well, he's well spoken and he knows, you know, he knows what he's capable of and what he's not too. So again, I think Magny's going to come up with a good game plan. Not that Greg Jackson and crew won't for Condit, but I think that the wrestling is going to be a factor here. And I think Magny probably gets it done. So not a confident pick, but I'm going to go Magny's way to pull off the small upset.
I can completely understand signing with Magny. The main issue with Condit is the fact that he's been out for over a year after that loss to Damian Maia, and he took a lot of damage before that in that title fight against Robbie Lawler, a fight that arguably he should have won. He should have been the UFC welterweight champion, at least for a little bit. But it didn't happen. They decided with Lawler via split decision, and then he lost his next fight. So, you know, Carlos Condit is a guy that clearly at his peak is at the top of the welterweight division, but is he still at his peak? That's the big question. You know, he took a lot of damage. As Nick mentioned, the business ventures thing, Condit was, he started up a coffee company on the side. So, you know, he's not devoting all of his time and resources to mixed martial arts and training and everything else. Is he going to be at that same level that he was when, he stepped away for a little bit? We don't know. I mean, some guys can step right back in and not miss a beat. Others, you know, they need a round or two to get their bearings. And you can't give Neil Magny a round or two. You know, this is a guy that basically starts slow and then turns it on as the fight goes. And if Carlos Condit starts slow, then he might be just giving Neil Magny a better opportunity to win the fight. So clearly there's some concern here. Condit, I think, is the better striker, obviously. He mixes it up better. He has elbows on the inside, knees to close the distance. His kicking game is better than Magny's. The only thing Magny might have better is just the jab. And that's just because Magny has a ridiculous reach in the welterweight division. But in terms of pure boxing, Condit has the better boxing too. So if Condit wants to win this fight, he needs to keep it upright. But that's easier said than done. He gets taken down a lot in fights. He's been taken down, but the biggest thing he has going for him is that he doesn't usually stay down. I mean, he usually forces his opponents to keep taking him down. So, with Condit, I think if he can keep this upright, he's going to be in a good position. He should be able to win, but if Magny mixes it up, lands some good jabs, and then starts mixing in takedowns and frustrating Condit, then I think Magny has a good shot. I mean, this is a guy that repeatedly loses early in fights and then comes back and doesn't just win the decision. He usually gets a stoppage. So I have a ton of respect for Neil Magny. I mean, when Condit lost to Damian Maia, he stepped away for over a year. When Neil Magny lost to Damian Maia, he went to a Damian Maia seminar and learned. So, you know, that just kind of shows you where these two guys are. Magny definitely still has, I think, more gas left in his tank, but Condit at his peak is better than Neil Magny has ever been. So if that version of Condit shows up, I think that he's going to be in a good spot. So I'm going to be optimistic here and hope that that version of Carlos Condit shows up, because it's always nice having a top guy in one of the divisions active again. So my pick is going to be Carlos Condit, although I'm not that confident about it. Now dropping down to the women's strawweight division, we have Cynthia Calvillo, who is 6-0, taking on a former champion Carla Esparza, who is 13-4. Now, Nick, what's the MMA oddsmaker's perspective on this one?
I put Calvillo minus 190 to come back, and Esparza plus 150. Right now it's Calvillo minus 245 to come back, on Esparza plus 205. Now this line did shoot up over 300, so a little bit more action coming in Esparza's way. But overall, the sports books are heavier on Calvillo for sure, and that's where the public action's coming in. Don't blame them. I mean, Calvillo's looked great. She's been the hyped prospect coming in, you know, to her UFC career. A lot of people were talking how good she was and how much potential she has, and she's delivered. I mean, she's faced some decent competition along the way thus far, and she's performed great. I mean, that win over Calderwood in the last fight, an improving Calderwood, by the way, it was a very solid win. It was a hard-fought battle, and she got the job done. Now she's facing another outstanding fighter, former champion in Esparza. That's going to be another test. I think people are counting out Esparza a little bit too much. I think stylistically here, they match up actually pretty decent. I mean, Esparza has a really good wrestling base. We all know that. Her stand-up's getting a little bit better as well. Has a submission game. I mean, if Esparza gets her back, she's no joke either. So she's capable of winning that way. But, I mean, it's clear to me here that Calvillo is the better striker overall on the feet. I think It'll be competitive at times, though. You'll be surprised. I think a lot of people will be surprised that Esparza probably hangs a little bit with Calvillo on the feet. But overall, I think it's Calvillo's submission game on the ground that's head and shoulders above Esparza's overall. I think the wrestling here belongs to Esparza. That's probably the only true advantage she has. But Calvillo has such good jiu-jitsu and good ground awareness that I wouldn't be surprised if she's able to reverse stuff on the ground as well. So it is a clear-cut fight, I think, for me, a competitive fight that Calvillo should win. She might even get a stoppage over Esparza if she's able to catch something on the ground. But overall, I think, again, it'll be a little bit more competitive than people think. And I think that you can't really count out a champion like Esparza as much as people are doing. So when the line shot up to over 300 or so, in fact, I think at one time it might have even reached 400. So as crazy as it was early on in that spot. But yeah, that's just ridiculous. That's too much respect or disrespect, I should say, against a girl like Esparza. But I get it. I think Calvillo is better too. And I think she does get the job done. So I'm not going to pick against her here. I think, you know, as the price continues to drop on the opener, of course, there probably was some value there. So hats off to you guys that gobbled that opener up. But now where it's at minus 245 or anywhere between 245, 300, I think it's just a tad high. So I'm going to pick Calvillo to win, but as far as the bet goes, I'd probably stay away from this spot right now. It might even be a dog or pass situation, even though I don't really like Esparza in this fight. So it is what it is. I think Calvillo does get the win.
This is just a situation of two fighters moving in different directions in their careers. You know, Cynthia Calvillo is on the rise. She's the hyped up prospect. Dana White's singing her praises. I mean, what more can you say about her? I mean, she's picked up quality victories over some excellent competition so far. I mean, the last one, especially against Joanne Calderwood, I mean, that was just, she actually was able to get multiple takedowns, had a lot of submission attempts, some guard passes. It was just a quality performance. And then before that, I mean, dominant stoppage victories over Amanda Bobby Cooper and Pearl Gonzalez. So, Cindy Calvillo seems like the real deal. Now, Carla Esparza is going to be a major test for her. Esparza, as Nick mentioned, you know, UFC champion. She has that in her blood. And, you know, Esparza's not somebody to sleep on. I mean, her only loss is in the UFC were to the Joanna Jędrzejczyk when she lost her belt, and then a split decision to Randa Markos that could have gone either way because Esparza picked up four takedowns in that fight, even though she got outstruck over the course of three rounds. So if this fight stays standing, Calvillo should have the advantage. Esparza isn't the best on the feet. Calvillo is much more crisp. I think she packs a little bit more heat in her punches, and she's more active on the feet. So in the stand-up, Calvillo, definitely. On the ground, however, you know, there's a bit of a toss-up. Calvillo does have a very dangerous Brazilian jiu-jitsu game, a very aggressive one. But Esparza has some elite wrestling where she's taken down just about everybody she's ever fought in her career. I mean, she had six takedowns against Marina Moroz. She had four takedowns against Markos, five against Juliana Lima. She even took down Joanna Jędrzejczyk when she lost her belt, but she just couldn't keep her down. And then obviously, when she won the title, she beat current champ Rose Namajunas. She took her down five times, wore her down, and eventually tapped her out. So, Esparza, if she's able to get top position and keep it, and keep Calvillo from reversing it or throwing up submissions, then there's a chance that Esparza could win this fight. It's not out of the realm of possibility that, you know, Calvillo is beatable. I mean, Calvillo is a super hype prospect, but that doesn't mean that she's invincible. I mean, maybe she just hasn't faced the right opponent that had a style to beat her yet. And Esparza, with her wrestling, could be dangerous here. On the feet, no. But if Esparza can drag Calvillo down, keep her on her back, and avoid being submitted, then there's a chance Esparza could pull this one out. So I'm picking Cynthia Calvillo, but I do think that there is a path to victory here for Carla Esparza if she's able to utilize that wrestling well. Now this brings us to the co-main event in the lightweight division. We have Khabib Nurmagomedov, who is 24-0, taking on Edson Barboza, who is 19-4. Now, Nick, where did you open this fight, and how has the public shifted things so far?
I opened Habib minus 260, the comeback on Barboza, at plus 180. Right now, over five dimes, it's Habib minus 280, the comeback on Barboza, is a plus 240. So a lot of margins have tightened up. A little bit more action coming in Habib's way. I mean, let's not make any mistake here. We all know who the fighter that's supposed to win the fight is here. We all know who the hyped fighter is. We all know who the undefeated, dominant fighter is here as well. I mean, it's Habib. He's – a lot of people want him to see him fight actually – you know, Tony Ferguson, they want him to see Conor McGregor fight him. I mean, just he's that guy. He's the guy that's in the mix, and a lot of people believe that he's the rightful champion. I mean, if you look at what he did to former UFC champion in Dos Anjos, which is obviously up at welterweight right now, doing some great things and in line for a title shot up in that division as well, he dominated the guy. I mean, dominant is not even the word. He just wasn't even close. It was more impressive than I thought it would be. That's the kind of skill this guy has. Or if you look at his last fight, I mean, to me, I thought Michael Johnson was a very, very tough opponent for him because Johnson has really solid takedown defense. And obviously on the feet, we know who has the edge. And Johnson was able to land early in that fight. But once Habib got going, my goodness, what he was able to do. I mean, he was – I've never seen Michael Johnson dominated like that on the ground ever. And again, Johnson's a very tough fighter. So that's the ability and the potential Habib has, and we all know that. Now, of course, weight cutting is an issue for him. Everything seems to be going okay from what we all hear out there and reports and pictures and all that stuff. So it seems like he is probably going to make weight here and he shouldn't have an issue. But again, that's something to keep an eye on. That being said, switching gears to his opponent, Barboza, man, you want to talk about one of the best strikers ever in the UFC, regardless of weight classes, it's Barboza. The technique the guy has, the power, the accuracy, the diverse striking ability. I mean, his kicks, his leg kicks are nasty. His head kicks are nasty. Everything about Barboza's striking game is just a thing of beauty, really. And he's going to have a huge advantage over Habib if this fight stays standing. And the little factor that we all have to consider here is Barboza has been taken down in the past, but how many people have really been able to keep him down and hold him down? So Barboza's takedown defense is, I think, the best that Habib's ever seen or ever faced thus far. And he's going to struggle. But if anybody could do it, of course, it's a guy like Habib. He's going to be able to, if anybody could keep Barboza down for a long period of time, it probably is somebody like that. And Habib's obviously his ground and pound is nasty as well. And if any kryptonite to Barboza's game, it's always been his chin. I mean, he is chinny for sure. He's only been knocked out officially once in his UFC career, but we've seen him been rocked quite a few times. We've seen him been submitted actually because he's been rocked as well. So he's, you know, that chin has definitely caused him problems in the past. And even though Habib's not known for his knockout power, even on the feet, I mean, he does throw with a little bit of power. I'm not saying he's going to knock Barboza out, but with Barboza's chin being as suspect as we think, you never know. I mean, you know, we've seen other people drop him as well. So that is the question mark with me and the concern, I guess, with Barboza. But outside of that, man, if Habib struggles getting this fight down, he's going to be the one getting knocked out. And I think that all things are lining up here where Barboza could pull off the upset. I mean, none of us are kind of feeling, hey, Barboza's going to come here, pull off the upset win. It's just one of those situations where we automatically all assume that Habib's going to roll in this fight and just continue his, you know, his title run or whatever. But I don't know. I think he's going to get picked apart here. I think what's going to happen is he's going to struggle getting the takedown and Barboza's going to land on him and put him out. And everybody's title hopes for Habib goes right out the window. So I'm going to go with the dog here. I'm going to roll with Barboza. And I think at plus 240, honestly, there's probably a little bit of value there as well. I mean, again, I'm banking on the takedown defense. I think that it's really key in this fight. But again, I mean, the only concern here would be if anybody could get him down and hold him down, it might be a guy like Habib. But I'll roll the dice at plus 240 for sure anytime with a guy like Barboza. He has a significant advantage on the feet, and I think he probably gets the job done if he's able to keep it upright. So I'll go against the grain here and pick Barboza. I know it's not going to be a popular opinion out there, but I think that in this matchup, styles make fights, and Barboza could probably keep it up and probably knock him out. So I'll go with Barboza.
And I'll come in the other way. Clearly, Habib Nurmagomedov has the best wrestling takedowns and top position of any fighter in the UFC lightweight division. Edson Barboza, one of the best strikers in the UFC lightweight division. So something's got to give. If Nurmagomedov can get Barboza down, I think he steamrolls him. If Nurmagomedov fails repeatedly for takedowns, Barboza might steamroll him. But there is one thing you have to consider, and that's not that Nurmagomedov might not be able to get takedowns. That has happened before. If you remember, you know, he had his fight against Gleason Tebow, I mean, he failed in every single takedown. Tebow was just too big and too strong for him. And Nurmagomedov, what did he do? He just spent the entire fight, basically, in the clinch. He kept repeatedly pushing Tebow into the fence and working for takedowns because he didn't want to just stand and bang with Tebow because he knew that Tebow was the better striker than him at that point in his career. So that is something you have to consider. I mean, Nurmagomedov, if he doesn't get takedowns, he's not just going to stand there in the middle of the cage and go, all right, well, let's just stand and bang now and see what happens. I think that he's a smart enough fighter that he still is going to close the distance and try to just make this fight ugly. So that's why I'm leaning more his way than anything, because in a pure stand-up fight, Edson Barboza would eat Nurmagomedov for lunch. I mean, we saw that when Nurmagomedov tried to test his stand-up a little bit against Michael Johnson in his last fight. Johnson was cracking him. Now, yeah, I mean, he didn't get dropped or anything, but I mean, he was clearly getting hit and he was definitely not able to hold his own with Johnson in the stand-up. And I think Barboza at this point in his career is definitely the better striker than Johnson, in terms of just pure technique and everything. So, what this fight boils down to is Nurmagomedov being aggressive, getting in Barboza's face, closing that distance. If Barboza is able to stay on the outside and work angles and keep circling away and frustrating Nurmagomedov, this fight gets interesting. But I just think at some point Nurmagomedov cuts the cage off, gets a hold of Barboza, drags him to the floor. And while Nurmagomedov, I don't see him knocking Barboza out on the feet, I could definitely see him knocking Barboza out on the ground. Barboza's chin is suspect, and Nurmagomedov has some just devastating ground and pound. And if he can really start letting loose with that from top position, I can see Nurmagomedov getting a stoppage victory. So I'm going to side with Khabib. From everything I'm hearing, the weight cut's going great, and that's always the biggest issue with him. Because he cuts so much to make the lightweight division. But I think he makes the weight cut fine. And I think this time around, he gets the takedowns against Barboza, a guy that's difficult to put on his back. But I think he does, and he wins convincingly. So my pick is Khabib Nurmagomedov. Now this brings us to the main event of the evening. We have a women's featherweight title fight between the champion, Chris Cyborg, who is 18-1 with one no contest. And she's taking on former bantamweight champion, Holly Holm, who is 11-3. Now, Nick, what's the MMA oddsmaker's perspective on this one?
I open Cyborg -305 to come back and Holm at +225. Right now, looking over five dimes, it's actually Cyborg -380 to come back on Holm at +315. So more action coming in Cyborg's way a little bit. There is two action in this fight as well. I mean, there's going to be definitely some support back in on Holm as well. So it's not going to be buried with action on Cyborg, but I'm not surprised there's going to be more action her way as well. I mean, let's not forget. I mean, Cyborg is widely recognized as one of the most dominant fighters in MMA period, male or female divisions. I mean, the girl is just a monster out there. She just destroys everybody she's faced. So a lot of people were, you know, the hyped fight back in the day was actually Ronda Rousey versus Cyborg. A lot of people were going to see it. Obviously, we're not going to get to see that. But the next best thing has always been in a lot of people's minds, Cyborg versus Holm, and we are going to get to see that. So looking forward to this fight. And I think it's going to be a fight finally. I mean, we've seen, like I said, time and time again, Cyborg's just ran through competition. And she could here as well. I mean, she's got enough power that if she connects clean on Holm, she's going to put her out. I mean, Holm, I don't want to say she's a little bit chinny, but obviously, you know, she's been tagged. She's been rocked before. I mean, she's been knocked out in a boxing match as well. This isn't boxing, of course, but I'm saying Cyborg has enough power that she could definitely do some damage against a girl like Holm and probably put her out. I mean, even Ronda Rousey in her fight with Holly Holm was able to just, you know, I guess stagger her a little bit there where Holm was able to or clinched up with her to kind of, you know, gather herself for a second tier there as well. So there's definitely enough power in Cyborg's game to, you know, to finish off Holly Holm. But what I think is going to happen here, honestly, is I think obviously Holm is a very smart fighter. She prepares very well. She is the best striker that Cyborg's ever faced, at least in MMA. I mean, obviously Cyborg has suffered a loss in kickboxing, but in MMA, I think Holm is definitely the class that, you know, of all of Cyborg's opponents for sure. And she's an intelligent fighter. She's a very accurate fighter. Her conditioning is going to be top notch as well. And she's just a very smart fighter. So I think this is going to be a fight. And I think that all of us and our mystique with Cyborg and how invincible she is and all that stuff, I don't buy it. I think all fighters obviously are beatable. And I think that Cyborg eventually her time is going to come. And if it comes, it's going to be to a quality fighter like a Holly Holm. So in my opinion, again, it's another spot where, I mean, it's hard to go against a fighter like Cyborg, but I mean, at plus 315, I think it's a dog or pass situation for sure with Holly Holm here in this spot. And I'm just going to pick her straight out as well. I think everybody's going to be surprised and get their eyes open here. I think Holm's going to probably end up knocking Cyborg out. So it's going to, roles are going to be reversed here. And I think we're going to see Holm's hand in the air and she's going to be, you know, be the victor here with a surprising but impressive knockout over Cyborg. So again, that's kind of saying a lot, but I think that the potential is there for Holm. I mean, I think her accuracy and her movement and her ability to game plan, like I said, smart, is going to come and pay dividends here against Cyborg. But again, all that could change. I realize it with one big punch from Cyborg, but I just don't see it happening here. I think Holm is going to be defensively aware enough that she's going to be okay on the feet. And I think she's going to find her spots and maybe it's a head kick. Maybe it's a punch. We'll see how it goes. But I think Holm eventually gets the knockout win over Cyborg. So another unpopular opinion. That's back to back co-main event and main event that I'm picking the underdogs that a lot of people aren't giving much shot. I think that they both have a realistic shot and they both deserve respect. So again, unpopular, but I think Holm's going to get the W here. So I'm going to pick Holm by knockout against Cyborg.
And I just don't see that happening. I mean, Chris Cyborg has been the most dominant, devastating female fighter in the history of women's MMA. I mean, she was the Ronda Rousey before Ronda Rousey existed. And people only, you know, dreamed that that fight could have been made. And then obviously, if that fight had been made, I think Cyborg really would have embarrassed her at this point. But, and Cyborg is no Ronda Rousey. People are trying to hype that up too, that, you know, Holly Holm could be the one to beat Ronda and Cyborg, but it's not the same. I mean, when Ronda fought Holly Holm, she was bull rushing forward directly into her straight left, and Holm used a lot of lateral movement and duck unders to get away from Ronda's power and, her ability to close the distance with her judo. So I just don't see it happening. I mean, yeah, Holly Holm is exciting. She has great head kicks. She does have a strong background in boxing, but that doesn't automatically make you able to beat Chris Cyborg. Nobody's been able to beat Chris Cyborg. Nobody's even really been able to be close with Chris Cyborg in a fight. I mean, she hasn't had a competitive fight in as long as I can remember. The only time that she's had a competitive fight was when she strictly did a Muay Thai contest against Jarena Bears, the best women's kickboxer in the planet. And Jarena Bears won. So, you know, props to that. But this isn't a Muay Thai contest. This is MMA. So if Holly Holm thinks that she can just copy what Jarena Bears did and beat Chris Cyborg, she's, you know, just being silly. I mean, she's not as good of a striker as Jarena Bears, first off. And if Cyborg had fought Jarena Bears in an MMA fight, she would have smashed her. You know, Jarena Bears went 1-3 in MMA. So, you know, that was clearly just a stand-up specialist being able to outstrike somebody. You know, Holly Holm, I think, is going to be able to get bullied here. I mean, Chris Cyborg's the strongest fighter that I've ever seen at 145 pounds or lower. Chris Cyborg is the most powerful striker in women's MMA history, in my opinion. And Holly Holm has a bit of a suspect chin. So, you know, as good as her lateral movement is, if Cyborg can cut off the cage, and she definitely will be able to do that better than Ronda was, I think Cyborg can land some heavy strikes and really do some damage, in this fight. So I just think, Holly Holm's in trouble. You know, she is a talented striker and she can punish people that rely on some specific, you know, one trick pony type of stuff. But Chris Cyborg is not a one trick pony. I mean, she can be patient at times. She can look for her spots. She doesn't gas out. She just is devastating. So I think that this does not end well for Holly Holm. I would be shocked if it went the distance. I think at some point within the first two or three rounds, Chris Cyborg lands something really heavy and Holm just isn't able to recover. So my pick is going to be Chris Cyborg. I think that she retains that women's featherweight championship. So that'll do it for our full event breakdown for UFC 219. Now, our premium bets for the event will be released this Friday following the weigh-in, so stay tuned for that if you're an MMA Oddsbreaker premium member. If we have a free play to give out, make sure to follow at MMAOBPremium on Twitter because that's where we'll post them first. We can also notify you of our free bets via email alert if you prefer that method. Just send an email to picks@MMAOddsbreaker.com and we'll add you to our free bet mailing list. Special thanks to our sponsor, Five Dime Sportsbook. Good luck, everyone, and hopefully the betting gods are on your side this weekend.